Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Adam Tranter.
I'm Ned Bolting.
And I'm Laura Laker.
Slight hesitation. We haven't done one for a while. We're a bit rusty.
We're not as professional as we thought we'd be. We're in our high-tech podcast studio, a field next to some wildflowers at the edge of Herne Hill Velodrome. And we're here talking... Well, we were just having a chat, weren't we? We thought we should ask how each of the were, because that's what real humans do. So let me try. How are you, Laura?
Wow, that was really natural.
Oh, yeah. It's like you really care. Been cycling around a lot. I think that's my usual response. Yeah, I've been in Cornwall. That was very, very hilly, extremely hilly, but very beautiful.
Cornwall's very hilly.
Yeah, I had my e-bike. Even the e-bike was struggling at points. I had to get off and push. Yeah, it was very hilly. Yeah. Oh God.
Devon is the same. I've got a friend called Simon who's got very wrinkly ears. I don't know why, but he was born that way. He's got it's quite small ears, but they're very, very intricate and they're very wrinkly. And Devon reminds me of Simon's ears. Because Simon always used to say about his own ears, I wish they'd just relax.
Oh.
And I think Devon's the same. Devon and Cornwall just need to chill out a bit because they're really hard, aren't they? Just up and down all the time.
Chill place, but very unchilled when it comes to road landscapes.
There's some quite fit-looking people down there, though, I noticed.
Very
quite fit-looking people, like older people who look very fit.
Yeah, wiry, mahogany legs, that sort of
just
thing.
Just keeping fit out there, yeah.
Yeah, outdoorsy. Yeah, not like us pasty Londoners.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What have you been up to, Ned?
Riding my bike.
Oh, hi.
I did my first... clipped in, helmet wearing, lycra wearing ride yesterday for about 3 or 4 years.
How come?
It's just a bunch of people I've been asked to ride with, but they were absolutely lovely people. Mm. And it was one of those piloted rides, you know, we have ride captains to tell you where to go and everything. In the Chilterns,
hey,
which
nice.
Also is a
hilly
part of the world which doesn't really know how to calm down.
I did the Chiltern 100 once, and it was really, really,
really
hilly.
Hard,
and I got back and I'd done 108 miles. I'm not even sure how that was possible because it was meant to
all
be
the wrinkles.
Yeah.
All the wrinkles. Make it that bit further. And then I've just been riding my bike on the track with you, Adam.
Yeah.
Here at Herne Hill Velodrome. So it's all about the bicycle so far, this podcast, isn't it? It's great to see a man of your souplesse on a track bike, because of course that was your métier as a youth.
Yeah, it's worth.
I mean, I'm not sure our listeners necessarily know your pedigree on a bike. I don't want you to blow your own trumpet.
No.
But I don't really know what it is. So you're going to have to tell us.
I raced, just as one example, I was never, you know, really good, but I raced here at Herne Hill Good Friday, which is why it's kind of like, you know, I like it here. And I remember my dad used to take me down here. And I raced in the Herne Hill Good Friday and raced against Bradley Wiggins one of the times. That was good fun.
I've heard of him.
Barry Higgins. My dad was super chuffed because in one race I beat Sean Yates, who was racing. But Sean Yates was retired and just doing it for fun. But
Sean Yates was a former Maillot Jaune at the Tour de France.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you know, that's no mean achievement.
Yeah, so, that, it's a little bit nostalgic. And it is, I should say, like, you know, I was big this place up, but it is a brilliant place. And the fact that we nearly lost this.
The same thought crossed my mind, actually, just because I haven't been down here for a while, but just turning into the iconic driveway there with its, you know, its brick entranceway and all that sort of thing. And I just thought, exactly that. I thought, we nearly lost this. And it was, you know, the people who fought to keep this place alive. And look at it. It's a beautiful summer's day, and as is absolutely appropriate, there's a local school who are on the track now.
Oh, wonderful.
And that's what needs to happen more and more, because it's great. It's a great resource.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've been doing a bit of bike riding as well, just while I went around the track. That was nice. We did an English pursuit, didn't we? We're head-to-head, two teams. That was a bit of, a bit of fun. They're worried about what they call the corporate crashes here, where they invite companies down for away days and people go over the finish line and then sit up and stop pedalling because they think they've finished.
You can't stop pedalling on a
track bike. But we managed to keep pedalling, which was which was the main thing. And I was thinking about how I would get here. A lot of my colleagues got the train, which I thought was quite odd because our office is at Fusion Media, which is my company, and we were doing a away day for this. This is why we're here. They all got the train, and I thought, that's a bit weird. And I just rode down here, and I thought it was brilliant.
Not that far, is it?
It's not far. I mean, I went on the main road. I guess this might be quite illustrative for the purposes of our topic today.
Very apt. Almost like it's planned or scripted or something.
Yeah, because there's no kind of obvious way from... I sort of came via sort of the London Bridge area.
But you came from East London.
I got the train to Liverpool Street and then I cycled down.
Right.
Yeah, I went along the Walworth Road, which is a busy road. There was a bus broken down, so I was stuck in all the traffic.
That was the only place I ever got ticked off by the police.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll confess, it was some time ago, 7 years ago, but I rolled through a red light. Yeah, in my defence, there is no defence, I was guilty.
It's outside the statute of limitations now, so you can talk about
I paid my fine, like certain cabinet ministers, I paid my fine and I drew a line. but it was quite funny. It was funny. The copper who stopped me happened to be a massive Tour de France fan and went, well, this is awkward, Mr. Bolting, but I'm going to have to give you a £10 statutory fine. That happened on the Walworth Road.
Gosh, £10?
It was quite a long time ago. I think it might be more than that, actually. It might have been £30. You could either pay the £30 or be subjected to a 30-minute road safety instructive video down at the police station or something like that.
Yeah, half an hour of Watch the Pigeon.
I paid the £30. Yeah.
Catch the Pigeon.
But I do now stop at red lights.
Yeah. Anyway, so it was a main road route. Wasn't particularly nice. It was okay, but did feel quite hairy at times.
Yeah.
Just right in the middle of the road, right in the middle of the lane, I should say. Claiming my space on the road, being very assertive.
But here's the thing, Laura, Walworth Road is much more my part of London than yours, obviously. I know that area probably a bit better than you. And so because I know Walworth Road, I tend to know the parallel roads that are quieter.
Yeah.
And I can pick my way around, just off the arterial
road. And you
avoid
it as a sensible person
and
would.
And avoid it, to a certain extent, does require 20 years of living in a city to really have that kind of mental map.
Yeah.
That it just builds up over time. And you can't expect people who are kind of like new to the area to know how to go about it, and that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even the routing apps were taking me down, like City Mapper was sending me down Walworth.
Yeah, Google Maps does that.
Even worse.
You look like you're cycling. Here, head down the Walworth Road.
Yeah,
they're not very intuitive, are they? They don't learn particularly, I don't think. Yeah, not responsive, really.
So if you hadn't guessed, we're talking about routing.
Yeah.
That's the headline.
Specifically quiet routes.
Quiet routes, because we've had this sort of chat a little bit. We've never gone into full detail on it, but, we talked about quiet ways, and they were sort of an original London staple. Some of them were okay and some of them were not so okay, and some of them weren't that quiet. They were a thing. And then when I was riding down, there's all these kind of mishmashes of, in Peckham there was the spine route, and that was just like a thing that I was somehow supposed to know what that means, and then even like C22, like, what does that mean? So I had sort of no idea where I was going, and I probably wouldn't have bothered unless I had planned a route, and I hadn't planned a route, but I've got this little beeline GPS sort of widget on my handlebars, which I recorded as I was going and using it, and I'll play that a little bit later. But that showed me all the good places to ride off the busy roads, and I came all the way from London Bridge to Herne Hill without touching a main road, not a single one. And I didn't feel like I was vulnerable, there were rubbish paths or anything like that. It was a proper solid route, good, 8 kilometers or something like that.
So who's plotted this route in the gizmo?
Well, I think they used the part of the Google Maps sort of style of stuff, but as we know, Google Maps is pretty rubbish. So then I believe they apply their own algorithms on top, and then also they use user feedback as well. So there's a little button on it where you can sort of press a smiley face if the road's brilliant, and if you feel like you're about to die, then you press the red one, which means not good route. And basically that amalgamated starts to influence the way that they start to direct cyclists. And it sort of got me thinking, so I talked to a lot of people who I think are like on the cusp of cycling for transport. They've made their mind in their heads that it's like a good idea, like they don't need persuading much further. But then they sort of, the way that you would go in a car is not always the way that you'd go on a bike, and there's always little cut-throughs, and that's the beauty of it. But there's no real coherent way to bring them together.
It's something that new cyclists ask me, actually. What, is there a good kind of app that gives you routes? And quite often I don't really know. I say maybe CityMapper.
But there isn't really.
No. I think they might use OpenStreetMap Beeline. I've got a feeling they might. Because I think that's a bit better for cycling. It's kind of an open source thing. And I think they kind of do routes based on, I don't know, what's there in terms of infrastructure and other things. I'm not really sure.
Well, OpenStreetMap is much more readily updated with cycling infrastructure. Yeah. So that's good because it directs you in the right place at the right time. And a lot of the stuff's going in very quickly, isn't it? So getting it updated, is important. I've always been surprised because I used to work with Strava in my day job, and people used to say, what's good for route mapping? And, Strava wasn't brilliant at doing that either. And actually, there's no real standout route organiser or route planner.
And the signage is very patchy.
The signage is really poor.
Around the country, think of outside of London.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been on the NCM and the signage is extraordinarily patchy.
Is it? Mm. Do you just sometimes find yourself in the middle of nowhere and thinking, am I even on the National Cycle Network?
So I went from Bodmin Parkway to the beginning of the Camel Trail. I had enough of Cornwall's hills. I was a bit traumatised. Thought I'll go somewhere nice and flat. And so I took the train to Bodmin Parkway, and then I cycled 5 kilometres there to the start of the Camel Trail. I had to stop, look at the map, or I went the wrong way 19 times in that
spot. Oh my gosh.
I counted back after I'd done it. Signs were missing.
Yeah.
Generally. Yeah, it's really interesting because that's one of the most popular.
Or facing the wrong way, pointing the wrong way.
Or just angles slightly wrong, or maybe covered with foliage, or they're just really small.
Yeah.
Or ambiguous.
Ambiguous, exactly, yeah. Yeah, we're not very good at cycle signage.
They've actually had to, on the National Cycle Network, I think Sushans use square poles now. Because when they were using round poles, people would just move and twist them around.
Yeah, that happened. That was one of the problems of in Bodmin. Sent me up a nice hill. Yeah. Luckily, I was on the e-bike, so it didn't really matter. And then I was like, I've seen this car park before. And then, sure enough, I had. Back in the same place. Yeah. What a bunch of jokers. They did fix it, actually, after I let them know. But
that is a bit of a perennial bugbear. I keep raising it on this podcast, don't I?
Yeah.
I think. But
someone will listen.
Right. All you need is a square post, don't you? It's kind of it's not really that difficult.
What's your experience on the old quiet routes, Ned?
I was thinking about apps, and I do remember, I'm not a big technophile. I don't like to have to depend on an app unless I can, avoid it. But I remember a few years ago, have a little dabble with an app called Komoot.
Oh, yeah.
I use that one.
Do you?
Yeah.
And it kind of worked. Yeah. Not because I didn't think it was great. I just stopped using it, and I've kind of fallen. It's no longer on my phone, and I've kind of forgotten about it. But I seem to remember that was all right.
Pretty good, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it. Yeah.
What does it do? It kind of. I was using it in a part of the countryside when I was doing my theatre tour. Sometimes I'd have two consecutive dates.
Yeah.
Within about 45 miles of each other. I think Leamington Spa was one. I rode from Northampton to Leamington Spa.
And you rang me one day and said, I'm sort of in Dorridge somewhere.
Yeah. And so parts of the country I don't know at all. That's right. Thinking back, that's exactly when I was using it to guide me on quiet roads between provincial English towns that I don't know anything about. And I think it did kind of work, actually. Mm. Whether it would get you through the maze of London, I don't know. But I like the sound of your responsive app there, your gizmo. Yeah, so it sounds very simple, doesn't it? The idea of just smiley face or an angry face.
Yeah, and all it's got is like an arrow and
quite effective, actually.
Yeah, it's
quite
the arrow kind of turns, doesn't it?
The old one, the arrow turns in direction, almost like a compass. Beeline Velo 2 shows a
layout
with the junction. So you know sort of exactly where to turn, and that's actually
then you get those
intuitive
weirdnesses where, because you're on a bike, you can go down that little cut through snickety thing there. But that's really hard to sort of map, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like an arrow pointing there and you're kind of not sure.
I didn't find the arrow very helpful. The map thing sounds a lot better because I did use the arrow thing once or twice and I ended up going the wrong way. I looked at my route afterwards because I recorded it. I did go three sides of a square at one point. But I think the kind of junction thing sounds a lot better.
It was a real big improvement. I was just able to get on with riding. There was one bit where, it's kind of legacy infrastructure where there was a kind of block of flats and then there's a side cut through with a shared usage sign and then an alleyway ultimately, and I I worked out and it was okay, and I was worried about going through parks because I chose the quiet route and sometimes that takes you through parks and stuff like that, but actually it was in areas where they thought about cycling in the park, so it was wide, it was it was sort of through, and then I sort of ended up in Peckham.
So it was all right. I wasn't putting you on a collision course with
pedestrians. No, not at all. And then, yeah, I was in, I sort of ended up in Peckham, which was good, and had to cross the road there. And went this crazy cycle lane.
Oh, I know exactly the one.
So bad.
It's a tiny strip of pavement.
Yeah, it's like paving stones.
And you've got buses coming in the opposite direction.
Yeah, and pedestrians.
Sort of thing. And pedestrians. It's about 150 metres long in Peckham town
centre. Yes, I know exactly.
I know exactly. It is.
Rye Lane. Anyone in Rye Lane,
exactly.
You know, we all know. It's the craziest bit of cycle path in all of
London. Oh, it's terrifying, yeah.
It's insane.
And I think loads of buses have driven over it, so it's all higgledy-piggledy. Yeah,
it's cracked and it's kind of like... Rye Lane was brilliant during COVID. They've opened it up.
Yeah.
It was shut completely to traffic its entirety. Most of, you know, for a year and a half or something, is great.
So my hypothesis is that we need to, a couple of things. We need to do better for people on quiet routes because we can't afford, you know, with my commissioner hat on, you can't build enough routes for everybody to use.
Well, with you must know a little bit about this now, Adam, having done your job for a while. How expensive is durable paint? I mean, coloured tarmac, basically. Something that will last.
Yeah.
I always think Quiet Way 1 would be so identifiable if it was just bright purple all the way from start to finish.
Okay.
You know? Like, solves all your problems. It's just a strip of a metre and a half wide, and it's purple tarmac, and it just goes the entire route. And you know, how can you go
wrong?
So,
basically, it's almost like a route-finding way, because the paint wouldn't provide, you know, it's not like infrastructure where they paint a crappy cycle lane. Just... You're on about, like, knowing where to go.
Coloured tarmac, that's something that'll last.
You know,
like, but then that becomes, it doesn't need to be segregated, but at least it's navigable.
It's more expensive than tarmac. There's a cycle street in Cardiff now, and they've used the red asphalts to kind of delineate cycle lanes, but also leave such a narrow, and they put a rumble strip in the middle, so it's uncomfortable to drive down, basically.
Oh, okay. So probably not that nice for...
No, because you use the lanes on either side.
See, yeah.
That works really well, and the colours make an actual difference to people's perception. It's like, oh, wow, this is a different sort of type of street now, so not only does it...
We need collectively to settle on a colour, don't we?
Cause,
this is the thing.
Because there's blue in southwest London, isn't there?
We have blue in Birmingham, but in Manchester they're using red, like the Dutch style, and so green sometimes.
I wonder what it's like for people with visual impairments. If you're colourblind, say, and you can't see certain colours, like it would just be invisible to you, right? Or, I don't know.
My son's colourblind.
That's a very good point.
And the paint wears off. That's the thing about the...
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm saying you need to do it expensively. Yeah, it needs to be something.
I don't know, maybe just signs... Maybe just like good signage.
Yeah, when I went to...
I guess our signs are quite little for cycling, aren't they?
Yes.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yes,
I can't
that's
remember
a very... Why are they so small?
Why are they so small? Because you only know they're there if you're looking for them.
Because cyclist size are so much better or something.
But then it means if you're driving on those quiet routes, so you're not really aware of the fact that it is a cycling route as well.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
a really
as a driver,
good point.
You're not
actually aware
of people... Yeah, you're going to encounter more cyclists than usual on this route.
Mm.
Yeah, because in the countryside, they're really hidden in the hedges. Literally, you might never notice them driving along because you're going faster. They're so small.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, make them bigger, have some sort of consistent signage. And with like how many miles it is to a certain town like you would have for a road.
Mm.
Sometimes you just get an arrow with a number on it.
Yeah.
It's like, well,
we've started talking about, and lots of places have done this way before us, but... our new cycle routing signs in the West Midlands will all be minutes it takes rather than, like 1.3 miles, because no one really knows what that actually, means.
People who might not be cycling to think, oh, okay, I could do that in that journey. And I think that's quite tempting, isn't it, for new people?
Yeah,
I
could do that
in
10 minutes.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. So,
it's a nice idea.
But on the cost thing, I think one of the fundamental issues with cost is that there's a lot of big obsessions with the arterial routes, the real, you know, the stuff that costs about £1.5 million per kilometre to build, the real high quality protected cycle infrastructure. And that's sort of fine for the arterial routes. But if you take a community about where we are now, you know, there's not that many roads that require that treatment, but there's this whole network of back streets that could be really quite and they've started to. You can see there's a bus gate at the end of this road, there's a low traffic neighborhood in Dulwich which looks brilliant. I cycled through and opening up that network, but still, even with the low, not to criticize the low traffic neighborhood, but the low traffic neighborhood's there, but there's no, you know, additional sort of directions or signs or you know, they've done the bit of reducing the traffic but not the bit of actually helping people know where to go, which I think's a bit of a miss.
Yeah. I would agree.
Yeah, I would as well. You can do a lot with the bollard. I mean, I remember I was in a talk recently. I think they were talking about the Torbay area. There's like...
You can do a lot with the bollard.
You can do a lot with the bollard.
Your next book needs to be called You Can Do a Lot with the Bollard.
Yeah, maybe I'm going to have a chapter in the book called that, actually.
Go on, what can you do with
you
the bollard?
You can do all sorts of things. Anything, anything you can think of, you could do it with the bollard.
No, I don't believe anything you can think of. Right? Can you go to space in a bollard? No, I don't think.
I mean, a spaceship looks a bit like a big
bollard. Oh, true. No, that's fair enough, yeah. You can have bollards that look like spaceships for the kids.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, you could.
Yeah.
There was this little presentation about making sort of Torbay area a low traffic neighbourhood, and I think they would need 9 filters to make the whole of the Torbay area, which is like 3 towns, like, you know, cyclable, easily cyclable. Yeah. Cyclable.
Just using 9 filters.
9 filters.
Or you could use
go around dressed as a bollard.
No, I was going to say that. I say, or what you often find is the amount of bollards required just to keep cars off every bit of, you know, pavement. And
oh,
stuff
yeah,
like
you have
that.
To stick them on the pavements as
you
well.
You can either buy 9 bollards and get the whole town to be a low traffic neighbourhood, or you basically need like 900,000 bollards to stop people, once you allow cars in, to stop them parking on the pavement, to stop them being antisocial, to all of these things. So save yourself some money, use less bollards, build low traffic neighbourhoods. That's the slogan.
Yeah,
I think. I went on a bike ride from London Bridge to Herne Hill, and I wanted to just share that with you to show you a little bit of how the routing side of things works in practice, and how that actually, it sounds a little thing, but you know, mode shift got me on a bike instead of getting on the train. Hello from Bermondsey, I think. Sort of London Bridge, Bermondsey area, and I'm going to Herne Hill Velodrome for a team day. I'm going to meet Laura and Ned there, which will be fun. And I've been to Herne Hill Velodrome several times, but I've always got the train. Before that, when I was racing there, I used to get driven from the Midlands with my dad. So I know where it is, I know it well, but I've got no idea how to get there from here. And that got me thinking, I think I know this to be true, that if we can unlock some of the quieter routes, the back streets, if you like, not the fabled kind of quiet ways, which were dreadful, actually, they weren't quiet at all, but the concept of filtering streets and building an actual residential network and a network that links our communities, I think that's got to be a significant part of the future. And I actually don't think it's a future that many of us are talking about, because we have a, you know, we have a focus on these arterial and, you know, radial routes going to the centre, but if we're not careful, there'll be nothing else connecting to those routes, and they're the journeys that are people making every day. So I'm exploring the concept of routing on this little ride, and I'm going to use the Beeline Velo 2. Now, you might have heard of Beeline. They had a Velo 1, their first product, and it's a beautifully simple little device that goes in handlebars, connects to your phone and points you in the right direction to where you're going, want to go, and that's sort of it really. And the Beeline Velo 2 is even more, I guess, elegant. It's a tiny bit of equipment on your handlebars, connects to your phone, and not only does it tell you where you need to go, they've upgraded it so it actually shows you snippets of the map, so you know which turnings to take, which is really helpful. And they've been crowdsourcing data on the best roads for people cycling. So people have been able to rate and review roads based on how good they are for cycling and feedback to the community. And they can provide you with a route based on that. So I'm actually going to plan my route to Herne Hill. I'm going to choose the quiet route, and I'm going a little bit fast if I can, because I need to be there at 2 and it's 1:30. So I'm going to hit go, and that sends it through to my device, send me to go forwards, and all I can see around here is people cycling. Actually, there's that trope, isn't there, oh, people don't cycle, we shouldn't, you know, allocate any space or let them do it, and obviously the stats aren't brilliant, you know, mode share is very, very low still, and has been, understandably, given the state and hostility of some of our roads. Getting a beep because it's telling me I'm going to go straight over a little dog leg here. You can see the little quiet street onto another little quiet street crossing Dunton Road. Got little traffic light signals for bikes. All these little things make a little difference. Going back to the tropes of people not cycling, I've got a theory that when you're on these quiet routes, all you see is people cycling, and not just ones or twos, like tens, hundreds sometimes at evening peak. That's where they all are. So if you're driving down a main road moaning about people not cycling, actually what you're forgetting is there are tons of unseen people quietly just getting on with it, finding a better way to get about, including me, as I cross over onto a route that says it's a C10. Going through a little housing estate, dead quiet here. Cycle parking on the road, cycle hangers so residents can make use of the facilities. That's pretty good. Well done, Southwark. I think a lot of people know what journeys they could do by bike, but they just don't know what route to take there, and Beeline could be a really good option. It's those short journeys that make the difference. So where I'm going is nice. So I'm going to press green, which I can do, because when I'm on this road, I get to rate it, and that lets other users and the mapping nerds know that this is good for cycling. I'm on C35 now. This is a sort of shared path, which normally I'd be a little bit snooty about. Sort of seems to roughly work and cope with this. Little left down here towards Burgess Park, it says. Some kids on cycle hire bikes having a water fight. That looks good fun. Half hoping they'd spray me to cool me down, but I'd be careful what I wish for. Nothing here. Now that's why, because it says accept cycles at the end, so it's another filtered street. There's cars here. They can get here. You're just not getting that rat running, and it's making the network actually usable and quiet. Kind of like how the quiet ways should have been. You can hear the noise probably a little bit now, because I'm about to cross the Old Kent Road. So, a bit different now. I'm in Peckham. I've come out of the park and then straight on over the high street. I'm in a bus-only bit. Sort of old infrastructure, you can tell. There's a kind of contraflow. Rye Lane is where I'm at. I'm just going right down a little. Okay, that's a market. Watermelons. Lovely. And trainers. And the little filter. Back onto the quiet streets. Little beep because I am turning left. Lady just on a bike has just stopped chatting to a friend who's pushing a pusher on the pavement. That doesn't happen on the main roads, does it? Which is nice. It says on the road here, next to the little cycle sign, spine, whatever that means. Is it spine route? Not sure. It's a bit, I don't know, it's old school this, there's no priority, it's give way and not massively clear, and they've got some traffic calming up here, old fashioned traffic calming. Don't get me wrong, this is fine, but it's not quite as good as the newer stuff. So I'm going to go past Dog Kennel Hill. It's all changed since I was last here. My friend used to live around here. Doesn't still live around here, actually. It's going to sound like I made this up, but I didn't. Talked to her yesterday. Katie, if you're listening, said she's got a car and uses it locally now. And I said, they're doing loads of stuff around where you live. Just cycle for short journeys. She said, I know. But my partner, he insists on driving to Lordship Lane to work and then moans about the traffic. And got to stop that if we can. Well, we can. We know we can. She was worried about how she'd carry her kids, and that's fine. Didn't know about cargo bikes. Didn't know about little bike seats you could put on. Still have some concern about safety, and I understand that. Saying all here, no access to Denmark Hill, which means that everyone's been using this as a rat run to get to Denmark Hill, and now they can't. Weird shared path behind a block of flats. C23 still. For those that know it, probably know what I'm referring to. I sort of feel like I'm on a country lane. It's quite a strange sensation, actually. There's trees everywhere, a few back gardens, but and I'm getting a little beep telling me to turn right, and I've done so, and I'm at Herne Hill Velodrome. Yeah, the last bit through Dulwich, that was super nice, really quiet. I think I can see Ned over there. I can say hello and get geared up for the track. Hello. Hello, hello, hello.
Sounded like a lovely ride, didn't it?
I thought it sounded like a lovely ride, Adam. And I'm glad you got here in one piece. Yeah. And as I said earlier, it was just great to see you on the track.
One of the people behind the Beeline Velo 2, the little widget that I was using to get here successfully and in one piece indeed, is Tom Putnam. And Tom, you're the co-founder of Beeline, and I wanted to ask you, what gave you the idea for the device in the first place?
2015, we came up with the idea, Mark and myself. Mark's my co-founder. We were just getting, we both cyclists, but not like mad keen lycra-clad cyclists, just using our bikes to get around the city because we preferred it to the tube. And we just found it really frustrating finding your way. Like, often we would kind of know our way, but you just have to get your phone out of your pocket, have a look at it. And then on top of that, the routes you were sent on weren't very good. So we thought, particularly in a city where you sort of know your way around it, if you just be pointed in the right direction, you could probably pick your own way through all the options you had just by looking at what's ahead of you, better than something like Google Maps was doing. So that's where we started, and sort of giving humans the freedom to pick their own way. And now we've almost come full circle in that we sort of take all this human feedback to then pick the best route for people.
Yeah, so the humans couldn't be trusted.
No, never trust a human. So just to clear it up, is this an app on your phone or is it a physical thing?
It's both. It's a physical thing, but it's powered by an app on your phone. So the physical thing is sort of the surface bit that you see when you're riding. Your phone stays in your pocket, but you set up the route on the phone, and all the routing and all the like intelligence is all happening even further back than that, in the servers in the back end and in the cloud. It's where all the clever stuff happens.
And the problem it solves, it sounds quite obvious in that sense, but in terms of the actual real life difference and real life feedback that you're getting from people, we just seem to hear, you know, anecdotally a lot of people saying, says, yeah, routing's a problem, I'd like to do it but I don't know how to get there. Have you, you know, because I know you were talking to TfL at one point, you know, have you sort of drawn a line between what you're doing and actually growing cycling and getting more people doing it and trying to lift one of the barriers, which is knowing where to go and feeling confident doing it?
Yeah, 100%. And we, you know, obviously we are a business and we have to make money doing this, but when we come to the end of whatever our journey is and we look back, like, where we will think it's been a success if we've got more people riding. So unblocking the barriers to that is super important to us, especially as nowadays cycling is, yes, it's still like super keen people who see themselves as cyclists and enthusiasts, but more and more people are just, especially after the lockdowns and whatnot, more and more people are just getting around by bike, and I just need that little nudge, the little bit of confidence to do that. So if we can make it a little bit easier, help people have that confidence to do it, then yeah.
And your mapping kind of works in London, few European cities, and you've got kind of really good data for like a few sort of big cities, and then you're expanding elsewhere, aren't you?
The routing, well, our product works anywhere in the world, because where we don't have our own routing, we fall back to using Mapbox, which is a third party. But all across the UK, all across Germany, Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, and then loads of cities across Europe, definitely. But it's all fed off the feedback data that people give as they ride. So like the thumbs up, thumbs down on roads that people can give as they ride. That is for sure strongest in London and then some other UK cities, some German cities. But the way our system works is it kind of learns from what it knows in one place and applies that somewhere else. So we don't have to have loads of feedback on every single street. If we've got lots of feedback on one street in London and not on another, it will apply that learning to the other. And similarly, if we've got feedback in London but not in Manchester or not in Berlin or not in Copenhagen, it still applies that. Like, it will get better as we get data in Berlin, Copenhagen, Manchester, but it does have intelligence from day one, if that makes
sense. Based on kind of characteristics of the street or whatever,
Yeah.
I noticed when you were just talking about the different types of people cycling and it diversifying, which obviously we've talked a lot about on this podcast, especially since COVID. But the thing that I really noted and pointed out in the ride is really that when you're exposed to a certain type of road, you know, whether you're on a bus or whether you're on a bike or in a car, you tend to build up a picture of what a person cycling is. And it actually ties into the sort of tropes that you hear about, oh, it's only for, you know, white middle class people in Lycra and the latte drinkers and all the stuff that you sometimes hear on Twitter. But actually, riding some of those quiet routes, which I wouldn't have known how to get to without the Beeline and wouldn't have used, there's just cyclists everywhere, people cycling everywhere, and none of them were, you know, what people would say as cyclists. You know, there's a guy cycling with his, walking his dog, like his dog was in the road, like walking next to him, because that was fine, because the quiet, the street was filtered. You had just people stopped having a chat with their neighbours, all on bikes. And if you've just you know, let's just hypothetically, if you're driving a taxi or a car for work or something like that, and all you see is the superhighway blokes, you miss all of that stuff. But it strikes me that could open up many more of our journeys, especially, you know, for women who tend to make more trip training, so they tend to do more short journeys rather than like arterial commutes and things like that.
I was going to ask Tom, actually, this kind of ties back to a thing that we spoke about maybe a year ago, you know, when COVID was much more present in all our lives, and how I felt that during COVID, actually, one of the most powerful tools of influencing public behaviour came not from the state, but from private corporations. So when social distancing, mask wearing and all these sort of measures first became part of our lives for so long, it was actually we were learning from Sainsbury's and Tesco's about how to behave in the new world, weren't we? Yeah. And the measures they put in place were actually, they were the most visible. And I think the same about changing behaviours in terms of modal shift and getting people onto bikes. And one of the things I've always been banging on about is that it frustrates me that the corporations, the big corporations who employ lots of quite poorly paid, quite young staff who are physically active enough to get on bikes, don't kind of incentivize their workforce to come to work by bike. You know, and I remember talking to you about the great example I always think of in my idealistic thinking is Pret-a-Manger. Why don't they make a big deal about giving all their staff a bike and they can livery it all up so we all know that Pret-a-Manger are doing the right thing. So with your product, strikes me, and again, it comes back to the diversity, the sudden difference in the people we see cycling in London, and I can only really speak of London, is driven to a great deal by Just Eat and Deliveroo and all those guys.
Yeah, I was going to say,
And girls who are suddenly there when a couple of years ago they weren't. Now, have you spoken to those corporations about kind of like incorporating your kit as part of the equipment they supply their staff with?
Yeah, we'd love to. And I think just from we have spoken to some of those guys, and going back to the point about like what we want to do is help people to get on bikes. You know, if we could tap into Deliveroo, Just Eat, whatever, we would be able to access many more people and help a lot more rides. Because I mean, I ride around London and I swear like 80% of the people I see on bikes throughout the day are delivering something rather than like somebody in Lycra going to work. It's just, you know, you're dealing with big corporations with all sorts of priorities. There's definitely to be honest, I don't know where this is now, particularly when it was all gig workers, very difficult like actually giving people bits of hardware because, you know, just complexities like people have to buy their own equipment and all that sort of stuff.
Fast turnover as well.
But we're really keen to do things where we can just integrate our software. So, you know, delivery riders are riding around with a delivery app and then they're like switching into Google Maps. If we could just integrate our navigation into there, so the delivery rider says, I've got to drop off a chicken curry here, and it just then guides them without them switching to something else.
Yeah, because
it keeps them on a safe route. Be good. Because, I mean, you know, I think both those companies have a responsibility to keep their riders safe, but also it's competitive. Like those riders can be riding for Deliveroo or Just Eat or Uber Eats, or whatever. Like for them to make sure those guys feel comfortable and safe and looked after is really important. Yeah.
If anyone from Deliveroo or Just Eat or Uber Eats is listening, I can speak from, not many people know this because I didn't mention it, but during lockdown, I signed up as a Deliveroo rider and an Uber Eats rider, actually, in my local area. And it was the kind of time where I did quite a lot of deliveries at the local hospital and things like that. And it was, you know, I was bored and I wanted to ride my bike, and I did that. But there were so many times where I just, like, I enjoyed it, but so many times I was just like, oh, sod this, because it would take you to Google Maps, you'd have it on there, you'd have your chicken curry or whatever in the bag, and then it takes you up like what it classes as a cycle route. And I had this big heavy turn electric cargo bike, and it took me up, you know, took me up a thing with steps, basically, like foot high steps all the way up, because it's a cycle path. And I'm there with, you know, with two orders. One's like predictably, one's a chicken curry and one's like an ice cream. And it's just, you know, next to each other. And you're just like sweating like mad. And it's awful. And if there was just better, you know, better routing, I think it would be, you know, people would be significantly happier. And like, even if they want to make their gig workers happier, which they probably don't yeah. or don't care. They can at least make it, you know, it's more efficient, isn't it? If you've got good routing, that's yeah. what logistics is. Yeah, yeah,
your
about,
ice cream
right?
melting and your chicken curry getting cold.
Yeah, that's not efficient.
Happy. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but no, I think that, you know, they do need to keep their gig workers happy, or their workers happy, however they're employed.
Well, there's a bit of a shortage of workers now, isn't there? Because, yeah, loads of people have left a lot of industries and, yeah, keep them happy. But, yeah, the amount of times I'm riding along and I can hear the Google Maps lady directing these riders and it's around my area, I'm thinking, oh, you don't want to go down there.
Yeah.
That's not
the busy road. And you end up seeing them like on a dual carriageway or something.
Yeah, it's so dangerous.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, we try and work out what is a good route to send somebody on. But something that we've been talking about a bit recently is like how you explain to somebody what that, or make somebody confident in what that route's going to be like before they start. So be that steps or dual carriageway or whatever. If you can, just through like colouring the line or explaining it as having some sort of description, they're saying this is going to be a tree line safe route, or this is on cycleways with a little bit of trunk road on it or something like that, or this is going to have some foot high steps in it. You're not always going to get it, be able to just, you know, the infrastructure isn't there. You can't keep people on beautiful car traffic free areas all the time.
Yeah.
But if you can say to somebody like, this is what you're in for, that probably goes a long way.
Yeah. And Chris Boardman says this quite a bit. And, you know, for a lot of people who are thinking about giving it a go, yes, the infrastructure is going to take a time, but there are still, I know we've had loads more traffic on these streets, but there are still in your neighborhood, some quiet streets that, you know, that you can, you know, they shouldn't have to, you shouldn't have to build a sort of life hack just to sort of ride a bike, but you can, you know. And I think that's super important for people to remember. Just finally, Tom, your app, your algorithm as well that goes into it, what are the attributes that prioritize a quiet route? What are you looking for a good, quiet, safe route that is you know, is prioritized, I guess, on the app?
I honestly couldn't tell you the exact things, because there's a machine learning model that takes the feedback that people, as people ride and say this is a good street, this is a bad street, it then learns from that and feeds that into, so it's like it's all being worked out behind the scenes. But I mean, obviously dedicated cycling infrastructure, great cycle lanes, you know, like cycle superhighways where there's a bus parked in it,
not so good.
No, so like, yeah, there's definitely flavors of cycle infrastructure, just like the class of roads, like something being a quiet residential street, one lane, like lit,
yep,
with pavements down the yep. side of it, all those things kind of,
and filtered as well with it. The, you know, you've seen where we are now, there's went through quite a lot of bus gates and low traffic neighborhoods.
I mean, if it's somewhere where it's like pedestrians and bikes, that's perfect.
There's a real gray area, isn't there, about cut throughs. When is a cut through, when is it cyclable, you know, are there barriers at either end of this little kind of path between two streets?
You can't
sometimes
get through on your bike, and
or
on different types of bike. I was just talking to somebody about
the road surface steps would be a
problem for anybody, any bikes, but sometimes you've got the little moped gates,
exactly,
which are actually perfectly fine if you're on a normal bike. If you're on a cargo bike or a mobility scooter or something like
or
that.
You can't get through. Road surface as well. So sometimes, you know, it'll be a bike path, but all of a sudden you're on really quite chunky gravel, and if you're on a skinny little road bike, you're in trouble. Yeah. That's where you really rely, I would imagine, on your users to inform the algorithm.
We do, and it's something that we would like to. So at the moment, we provide a sort of fast route, a quiet route, and a balanced route, which is somewhere in between. But it's not specific to road biking or gravel biking or cargo bikes. Something we would like to do in future is do that kind of specialization for that, because it is difficult. Even taking the feedback that we have, the thumbs up, thumbs down, or, you know, this is good, this is bad, it very much depends on what you are, on who you are, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Some people, exactly, like, which part of it
this is
the
this is what
for.
Makes cycle routing difficult. For car routing, unless you're, I don't know, you're driving a sports car in the mountains or something, well, everyone just wants to get from A to B as quickly as possible. You don't really care what else goes into that.
Yeah.
And everyone's got the same criteria. Whereas cycling, if you're on a Brompton or you're on a gravel bike, you have very different criteria. If you're riding to work, you probably want to avoid every hill you can. If you're out trying to get fit, you're probably looking for hills. Like, the criteria varies by individual, by type of bike they're riding, by what they're doing with that bike ride. To get it perfect for everybody, we will need to have criteria where you can say, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And that's actually where, going back to the thing about telling people what the experience will be like, saying this ride will involve this, is really important to us. It's not just about, it's going to take you 20 minutes as it would be in a car. It's about telling you what you're going to feel.
Yeah.
Have on that ride.
Even by time of day, like some roads might be really busy at school run time, and that might not matter if you're in a car, but then if you're on a bike, you really don't want to be with all those.
Yeah.
You have to be down an alleyway with no lighting.
Yeah, it's a cutthroat, but it's also
disastrous.
Like a canal towpath.
Yeah.
Lovely in the day.
Yeah.
Probably terrifying in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Totally. The other thing about the road thing, you know, with the, just getting from A to B as quickly as possible, it strikes me that our roads are of a standard quality and width and quality, which is not the same for some cycle routes, you know. Yeah. I think that someone did a graphic of what it would look like if a car driver had to stop and press a button to cross the road, or to be trying to get through these big barriers to try, you know, you just wouldn't stand for it. But somehow we're fair game.
I can't remember, it's somewhere around Orgate. I remember there's one where like the bike path just ends in the middle of the road and it's just one way oncoming traffic towards you.
Brilliant. Thumbs down for that one. Sad face.
Hopefully. Well, I should probably go and have a look at the data to see if that one's reflected. Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot, Tom. It's been really, really, really interesting.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for letting me have a go on the Beeline Bello 2. I enjoyed it and I will use it to get back to Euston later, which I've got no idea how to get there. So that's quite helpful.
Follow the arrows.
Cool. So that was interesting. That was routing. Yeah.
Very interesting. That whole thing that Tom says about, you know, the unanimity of the motivation of drivers versus the variety of reasons to be people. It's really, it's a very straightforward point, but it's really significant, isn't it?
Yeah. Totally makes sense why there aren't decent routing apps.
And why the whole bloody cyclists clumping us all together in one lump is so frustrating.
Yeah.
The cars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And partly the kind of infrastructure and routes that we've got. Yeah. That's kind of all we get. So that's all you get.
There we go. Well, you've been listening to Streets Ahead. Our editor, as always now, is Claire Mansell, doing a brilliant job, so thank you. Let us know what you think at PodStreetsAhead on Twitter, and you can rate us and review us. That really, really helps us more than you would think. And share the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it, anyone interested in bollards or bollards going to space or quiet routes.
Quality bollard chat today.
And you can find out our merchandise, which says it's amazing what you can do with a bollard. It's available. It's not available. It's never going to be available. But
the War on Cars does it, so maybe we should.
It does.
I've got a War on Cars hoodie.
Oh, yeah. You got all the merch, didn't you? They're doing rain capes now, so.
We need to up our merch game.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, and until next time.
Yeah, bye.
All right, bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.